I wonder if you recognize this old group. I'll give you a little hint. Their names were Dan Peek, Jerry Beckley, and Dewey Bunnell. What band is it? Can you remember? Someone remember? Say it again. America. Yeah. And they're, you know, the early 70s, kind of when I was listening to the radio. When I was listening to music on the radio. They had a bunch of hits, and you know, there's one that I think about today. Can you feel it? Do you know where you are? See, I can tell how old you are.
On the first part of the journey, I was looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There was sand and hills and rings.
See, some are singing along.
I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain. In the desert, you can't remember your name, 'cause there ain't no one for to
keep. Okay, everybody, you ready?
La 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 la.
You guys.
La, 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 la,
you guys ready?
La, 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 la.
Ah, see, that's kind of fun. We've done that one before. And it's a way to, well, where am I when I hear that song? In the 70s, yes. That deserted time. The wasteland and the wilderness of culture. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those times, one of those places where you feel the kind of dryness, the desiccated soul of things, bereft of moisture, lonely. You're just kind of out there. And I wonder if you've been to the desert. It's a nice place to visit. Not sure anybody really wants to live there. Luke's audience would have understood very well the wilderness, would have understood very well those deserted places, a place they'd have to enter sometimes, a place they'd have to cross sometimes, a place they would have to steel themselves to endure sometimes. It's not a vacation. Not, it is instead a place of danger, a place of no boundaries and no rules, and maybe above all, nobody watching over you. Can you reach forward and grab the Bible out of the pew? We'll do a little bit of work today. I want us to look at this gospel lesson because it is compelling. Take a look at the gospel, and if you look in the back, page 61, Luke chapter 3, verses 1 to 6. Luke chapter 3, some still have the hymnal, and they're totally lost. No, it's the Bible. Can you find the Bible toward the back, page 61, Luke chapter 3, verses 1 to 6? And what's happening is the gospel writer Luke is trying to set this little story in a particular context. He wants us to know what was going on, wants us to remember that this is an actual moment, an actual place. Like a good physician, Luke the physician, is taking notes. He's being specific, and he's recording this so that it can be verified later on. It is, as he says later, an orderly account for his readers and for the sake of history. Now, I'll give you a hint. There's seven leaders represented. Have you got the paragraph in your hand? Seven powers, seven names that are going to be coming, and they're going to go bang, 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 all right? So who's the first one? It's the 15th year of the reign of
Tiberius,
the emperor. The head cheese, the one over it all. It must have seemed to them like that was the whole of the earth. Okay, who's number two? Pontius Pilate. He's the governor of Judea. In some ways, he's the one who got stuck. You know, he's the one that got sent off to this backwater place so he could deal with, oh, who were they again? Oh, those Jews. Okay, there's at least two powers there. Pilate is known for his administration of bribes and insults and robbery. Tacitus says that he evoked his powers with savage ferocity. He ordered executions without trial. and even without cause. One, two, and then who's three? Who's the third of the rulers that gets named there?
Herod.
Herod. There's actually several Herods. Our best guess is this is Antipas. It's that particular Herod. He had a penchant for building projects. He just couldn't stop building. In fact, he kept building even after they ran out of money. Kept building. Bankrupted the whole of the community. Now, Herod had a brother. What's his name? Philip. So you guys got this. Isn't Bible study fun? Herod is the brother. He's not only got the same M.O., he's got the same DNA. Number five, who's the next power there listed? Lysanias. I don't know, Abilene, it's hard kind of figure that one out and why Luke would have included it. Probably on the western slopes of Mount Hermon. Lysanias is one of those who offered a mercenary king 1,000 talents of silver and 500 women for the capture of Antigonus. You kind of see where his head was. He was later on executed by Cleopatra's lover, Mark Antony. Well, there's two more powers there, and who are they? Annas and Caiaphas. It's quite interesting because the temple system had a chief priest, not chief priests. So what's with that? Were these two relatives? Were they in the middle of some transition of leadership? What sort of nepotism is going on? When you read to the end of the gospel, of course, you see, oh, tangled connections there. So Luke's audience, they're hearing this. They're looking at this list. They see these names. And what happens? I think they start to get a tummy ache. I think they knew very well what these powers were up to. They understood the consequences for their life together, the future of their community, and I don't think they were feeling good. It stirred up stuff in them. And you can feel what Luke is up to. He's always trying to remind us that the Word of God comes at a particular time, in a particular place, to particular people. It might be as if in the second year of Donald, in the sixth year of Jay, in the 12th year of Rick, in the fourth year of Dave, in the first year of Cassie, when Kirby was the bishop and Elizabeth was the presiding bishop, does something start to happen? Do we feel the context of our own times? Is it possible that the Word of God could come now? Even now, actual and specific, in a real time, in a real place, at moments when I'm not comfortable, at moments when I disagree, moments when I'm so mad at my neighbor I could scream, could the Word of God come then? This last week, I've been visiting a woman from our congregation, and I've been visiting her because on the night before Thanksgiving, she was helping to make preparations for what would be the family feast, and the kitchen was full of ingredients and things to do and deadlines to meet, and something happened as she made a move, and she fell, and she broke her hip. It wasn't quite the Thanksgiving that she had in mind. And they're off to emergency, and then off to the hospital, and then off to surgery, and then off to recovery, and then off to transitional care, and many days now. I saw her a couple of times, and sometimes she was surrounded by loving family and grandkids and sort of the buzz and love of those moments. And I wondered, you know, how she's feeling. What's it like to have this kind of an experience, to have the holidays unfold this way instead of what she had in mind? And each time I saw her, she was smiling. Now, I make a lot of hospital visits, and I usually show up, and you get a smile like this. Oh, Pastor, it's so good to see you. You know, that smile that with a mouth, but not with eyes, not with soul. That smile went to her core. Not at happiness to see me, but that in that moment, she knew of God's care and God's love. She knew of God's attention, God's grace, and God's promise for life. A bend to the desert on the horse with no name. Felt good to be out of the rain. In the desert, you can't remember your name. There ain't one there to give you no name. La, 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 la. La 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 la. See, we're born about 1950 something. Carla and I spend time on the couch together. Sometimes we even hold hands, but mostly we have something else in our hands. We have one of these. It's you know what that is, right? Those are the buttons on the remote. And I try as I do, I cannot figure out how to get to Netflix. And, you know, there's Hulu, and wait a minute, how did I get to Hulu? And then, you know, and then when we do watch something, it's nice to be able to go backwards because she'll miss a line or I'll miss a line or say, this is boring, let's go faster, you know, and get through something. But there's one of those buttons that I wonder that we need to pay attention to today, and it's this button. Which one is that? Yeah. Now I'm seeing how old you are. When you push that, what happens? Yeah. It just freezes. It just holds on that moment. It's a pause. I don't know if you've looked at the devotions for Advent. They got published, and I think I got one here. Have you got one of those yet? You got to pick one up. Each day, there are people from Zion Lutheran and from Faith Lutheran and members of this congregation who have written thoughts or shared memories. This last Friday, it was Roland Behe's turn, and he wrote about the pause button. And I have just taken that to heart. He quotes from the psalm, from Psalm 92, "For God alone my soul waits in silence." A moment to just stop, just to kind of wait in the particular moments, in the deserted moments, in the hard moments, in the moments where we have no control, no escape, and no choice. When as far as we can see there is wilderness and brokenness and joylessness, I think that's when the word of the Lord comes. Oh, it comes all the time, but maybe it comes especially then when you're in the hospital on Thanksgiving instead of somewhere else, when fill in the blank. Today's scriptures are an invitation to remember that this word of love and promise comes especially then. It comes when I'm least comfortable, when I'm most unable to change circumstances, when it seems like the wheels are coming off. How does that go? For God alone, my soul waits in silence. I want to try that with you, but I want to try it with your eyes closed and with your breathing. So both hands on your chest. Remember what preschool kids do when they get upset? Make your chest go up and down, right? Right? What we'll do is we'll, on the inhale, we'll have the phrase, "For God alone." So let's just practice. I'll say the words and you breathe deep. "For God alone." And now exhale, "My soul waits in silence." You see how this is going to work? We'll do it three times, real slow. Ready? Eyes closed, hands on. "For God alone, my soul waits in silence. For God alone, my soul waits in silence."